Newton Media Group, a family of creative services, presents the Voice Over Work podcast. On the podcast today, we take a little deeper look into a book introduced in a previous podcast with a chapter-by-chapter look at The Discourses of Epictetus by Epictetus, narrated by Russell Newton. Book 3, Chapter 1, Of Finery in Dress. A certain young man, a rhetorician, came to see Epictetus with his hair dressed more carefully than was usual, and his attire in an ornamental style, whereupon Epictetus said, "Tell me you do not think that some dogs are beautiful, and some horses, and so of all other animals?" "I do think so," the youth replied. "And not then some men also beautiful, and others ugly?"
"Certainly."
"Do we then, for the same reason, call each of them in the same kind beautiful, or each beautiful for something peculiar? And you will judge of this matter thus. Since we see a dog naturally formed for one thing, and a horse for another, and for another still, as an example, a nightingale, we may generally, and not improperly, declare each of them to be beautiful then, when it is most excellent according to its nature. But since the nature of each is different, each of them seems to me to be beautiful in a different way. Is it not so?" He admitted that it was. "That then which makes a dog beautiful makes a horse ugly, and that which makes a horse beautiful makes a dog ugly, if it is true that their natures are different."
"It seems to be so."
"For I think that what makes a pancratiast beautiful makes a wrestler to be not good, and a runner to be most ridiculous. And he who is beautiful for the pentathlon is very ugly for wrestling."
"It is so," said he.
"What then makes a man beautiful? Is that which in its kind makes both a dog and a horse beautiful?"
"It is," he said.
"What then makes a dog beautiful?" "The possession of the excellence of a dog." "And what makes a horse beautiful?" "The possession of..." Chapter 2. In what a man ought to be exercised who has made proficiency, and that we neglect the chief things. There are three things in which a man ought to exercise himself who would be wise and good. The first concerns the desires and the aversions, that a man may not fail to get what he desires, and that he may not fall into that which he does not desire. The second concerns the movements toward and the movements from an object, and generally, in doing what a man ought to do, that he may act according to order, to reason, and not carelessly. The third thing concerns freedom from deception and rashness in judgment, and generally, it concerns the ascents. Of these topics, the chief and the most urgent is that which relates to the affects, for an affect is produced in no other way than by a failing to obtain that which a man desires, or a falling into that which a man would wish to avoid. This is that which brings in perturbations, disorders, bad fortune, misfortunes, sorrows, lamentations, and envy. That which makes men envious and jealous, and by these causes we are unable even to listen to the precepts of reason. The second topic concerns the duties of a man. For I ought not to be free from affects like a statue, but I ought to maintain the relations natural and acquired, as a pious man, as a son, as a father, as a citizen. The third topic is that which immediately concerns those who are making proficiency, that which concerns the security of the other two, so that not even in sleep any appearance unexamined may surprise us, nor in intoxication, nor in melancholy. Chapter 3. What is the matter on which a good man should be employed, and in what we ought chiefly to practice ourselves? The material for the wise and good man is his own ruling faculty, and the body is the material for the physician and the elliptes. The land is the matter for the husbandman. The business of the wise and good man is to use appearances conformably to nature, and, as it is the nature of every soul to assent to the truth, to dissent from the false, and to remain in suspense as to that which is uncertain, so it is, its nature to be moved toward the desire of the good and to aversion from the evil. And with respect to that which is neither good nor bad, it feels indifferent. For as the money changer is not allowed to reject Caesar's coin, nor the seller of herbs, but if you show the coin, whether he chooses or not, he must give up what is sold for the coin. So it is also in the matter of the soul. When the good appears, it immediately attracts to itself. The evil repels from itself. But the soul will never reject the manifest appearance of the good, any more than persons will reject Caesar's coin. On this principle depends every movement both of man and God. For this reason, the good is preferred to every intimate relationship. There is no intimate relationship between me and my Father, but there is between me and the good. Are you so hard-hearted? Yes, for such is my nature, and this is the coin which God has given me. For this reason, if the good is something different from the beautiful and the just, both father is gone and brother and country and everything. But shall I overlook my own good in order that you may have it, and shall I give it up to you? Chapter 4. Against a person who showed his partisanship in an unseemly way in a theater. The governor of Epirus, having shown his favor to an actor in an unseemly way, and being publicly blamed on this account, and afterward having reported to Epictetus that he was blamed and that he was vexed at those who blamed him, Epictetus said, "What harm have they been doing? These men also were acting as partisans, as you were doing." The governor replied, "Does then any person show his partisanship in this way?" "When they see you," said Epictetus, "who are their governor, a friend of Caesar and his deputy, showing partisanship in this way, was it not to be expected that they also should show their partisanship in the same way? For if it is not right to show partisanship in this way, do not do so yourself. And if it is right, why are you angry if they followed your example? For whom have the many to imitate except you, who are their superiors? To whose example should they look when they go to the theater except yours? See how the deputy of Caesar looks on. He has cried out, and I too then will cry out. He springs up from his seat, and I will spring up. His slaves sit in various parts of the theater and call out. I have no slaves, but I will myself cry out as much as I can and as loud as all of them together. You ought then to know when you enter the theater that you enter as a rule and example to the rest how they ought to look at the acting. Why then did they blame you? Because every man hates that which is a hindrance to him. They wished one person to be crowned. You wished another. They were a hindrance to you, and you were a hindrance to them. You were found to be the stronger, and they... Chapter 5. Against those who, on account of sickness, go away home. "I am sick here," said one of the pupils, "and I wish to return home." "At home, I suppose you are free from sickness. Do you not consider whether you are doing anything here which may be useful to the exercise of your will, that it may be corrected? For if you are doing nothing toward this end, it was to no purpose that you came. Go away. Look after your affairs at home. For if your ruling power cannot be maintained in a state conformable to nature, it is possible that your land can, that you will be able to increase your money. You will take care of your father in his old age, frequent the public place, hold magisterial office. Being bad, you will do badly anything else that you have to do. But if you understand yourself and know that you are casting away certain bad opinions and adopting others in their place, and if you have changed your state of life from things which are not within your will to things which are within your will, and if you ever say, 'Alas, you are not saying what you say on account of your father or your brother, but on account of yourself,' do you still allege your sickness? Do you not know that both disease and death must surprise us while we are doing something? The husbandman, while he is tilling the ground, the sailor while he is on his voyage? What would you be doing when death surprises you? For you must be surprised when you are doing something. If you can be doing anything better than this when you are surprised, do it. For I wish to be surprised by disease or death when I am looking after nothing else than that I may be free from perturbation, own will that I may be free from hindrance, free from compulsion, and in a state of liberty. Chapter 6, Miscellaneous. When some person asked him how it happened that since reason has been more cultivated by the men of the present age, the progress made in former times was greater. In what respect, he answered, has it been more cultivated now, and in what respect was the progress greater then? For in that in which it has now been more cultivated, in that also the progress will now be found. At present, it has been cultivated for the purpose of resolving syllogisms, and progress is made. But in former times, it was cultivated for the purpose of maintaining the governing faculty in a condition conformable to nature, and progress was made. Do not then mix things which are different, and do not expect, when you are laboring at one thing, to make progress in another. But see if any man among us, when he is intent, see eye upon this, the keeping himself in a state conformable to nature, and living so always does not make progress, for you will not find such a man. The good man is invincible, for he does not enter the contest where he is not stronger. If you want to have his land and all that is on it, take the land. Take his slaves, take his magisterial office, take his poor body, but you will not make his desire fail in that which it seeks, nor his aversion fall into that which he would avoid. The only contest into which he enters is that about things which are within the power of his will. How, then, will he not be invincible? Some person, having asked him what is common sense, Epictetus replied, as that may be called a certain common hearing which only distinguishes vocal sounds, and that which distinguishes musical sounds is not common but artificial. So there are certain... Chapter 7. To the administrator of the free cities, who was an Epicurean. When the administrator came to visit him, and the man was an Epicurean, Epictetus said, it is proper for us, who are not philosophers, to inquire of you, who are philosophers, as those who come to a strange city inquire of the citizens, and those who are acquainted with it, what is the best thing in the world, in order that we also, after inquiry, may go in quest of that which is best, and look at it, as strangers do with the things in cities. For that there are three things which relate to man, soul, body, and things external, scarcely any man denies. It remains for you philosophers to answer what is the best. What shall we say to men? Is the flesh the best? And was it for this that Maximus sailed as far as Cassiope in winter with his son, and accompanied him, that he might be gratified in the flesh? Then the man said that it was not, and added, far be that from him. Is it not fit, then, Epictetus said, to be actively employed about the best? It is certainly of all things the most fit. What, then, do we possess which is better than the flesh? The soul, he replied. And the good things of the best, are they better, or the good things of the worse? The good things of the best. And are the good things of the best within the power of the will, or not within the power of the will? They are within the power of the will. Is then the pleasure of the soul a thing within the power of the will? It is, he replied. And on what shall this pleasure depend? On itself? But that cannot be conceived, for there must first exist a certain substance or nature of good, by obtaining which we shall have a... Chapter 9. To a certain rhetorician who is going up to Rome on a suit. When a certain person came to him who was going up to Rome on account of a suit which had regard to his rank, Epictetus inquired the reason of his going to Rome, and the man then asked what he thought about the matter. Epictetus replied, if you ask me what you will do in Rome, whether you will succeed or fall, I have no rule about this, but if you ask me how you will fare, I can tell you. If you have right opinions, you will fare well. If they are false, you will fare ill. For to every man the cause of his acting is opinion. For what is the reason why you desire to be elected governor of the Gnosians? Your opinion, and going in winter, and with danger and expense. I must go. What tells you this? Your opinion. Then, if opinions are the causes of all actions, and a man has bad opinions, such as the cause may be, such also is the effect. Have we then all sound opinions, both you and your adversary? And how do you differ? But have you sounder opinions than your adversary? Why? You think so, and so does he think that his opinions are better, and so do madmen. This is a bad criterion. But show to me that you have made some inquiry into your opinions and have taken some pains about them. And as now you are sailing to Rome in order to become governor of the Gnosians, and you are not content to stay at home with the honors which you had, but you desire something greater and more conspicuous. So when did you ever make a voyage for the purpose of examining your own opinions and casting them out, if you have any that are bad? Whom have you approached for this purpose? What time have you fixed for it? What age? Chapter 10. In what manner we ought to bear sickness. When the need of each opinion comes, we ought to have it in readiness. On the occasion of breakfast, such as relate to breakfast. In the bath, those that concern the bath. In bed, those that concern bed. Let sleep not come upon thy languid eyes before each daily action thou hast scanned. What's done amiss, what done left undone. From first to last examine all. And then, blame what is wrong, in what is right rejoice. And we ought to retain these verses in such way that we may use them, not that we may utter them aloud, as when we exclaim, Paeon Apollo. Again, in fever, we should have ready such opinions as concern a fever, and we ought not, as soon as the fever begins, to lose and forget all. A man who has a fever may, if I philosophize any longer, may I be hanged. Wherever I go, I must take care of the poor body that a fever may not come. But what is philosophizing? Is it not a preparation against events which may happen? Do you not understand that you are saying something of this kind? If I shall still prepare myself to bear with patience what happens, may I be hanged. But this is just as if a man, after receiving blows, should give up the pancratium. In the pancratium, it is in our power to desist and not to receive blows. But in the other matter, we give up philosophy. What shall we gain? I gain. What then should a man say on the occasion of each painful thing? It was for this that I exercised myself. For this I disciplined myself. God says to you, give me a proof that you have duly practiced athletics, that you have eaten what you ought, that you have been... Chapter 11. Certain Miscellaneous Matters. There are certain penalties fixed, as by law, for those who disobey the divine administration. Whoever thinks any other thing to be good except those things which depend on the will, let him envy, let him desire, let him flatter, let him be perturbed. Whoever considers anything else to be evil, let him grieve, let him lament, let him weep, let him be unhappy. And yet, though so severely punished, we cannot desist. Remember what the poet says about the stranger. Stranger, I must not, even if a worse man come. This, then, may be applied even to a father. I must not, even if a worse man than you should come, treat a father unworthily, for all are from paternal Zeus. And of a brother, for all are from the Zeus who presides over kindred. And so, in the other relations of life, we shall find Zeus to be an inspector. Chapter 12. About Exercise. We ought not to make our exercises consist in means contrary to nature and adapted to cause admiration, for if we do so, we who call ourselves philosophers shall not differ at all from the jugglers. For it is difficult even to walk on a rope, and not only difficult, but it is also dangerous. Ought we for this reason to practice walking on a rope, or setting up a palm tree, or embracing statues? By no means. everything which is difficult and dangerous is not suitable for practice, but that is suitable which conduces to the working out of that which is proposed to us as a thing to be worked out. To live with desire and aversion, free from restraint. And what is this? Neither to be disappointed in that which you desire, nor to fall into anything which you would avoid. Toward this object, then, exercise ought to tend. For since it is not possible to have your desire not disappointed and your aversion free from falling into that which you would avoid, great and constant practice, you must know that if you allow your desire and aversion to turn to things which are not within the power of the will, you will neither have your desire capable of attaining your object, nor your aversion free from the power of avoiding that which you would avoid. And since strong habit leads, and we are accustomed to employ desire and aversion only to things which are not within the power of our will, we ought to oppose to this habit a contrary habit, and where there is great slipperiness in the appearances, there to oppose the habit of exercise. I am rather inclined to pleasure. I will incline to the contrary side above measure for the sake of exercise. I am averse to pain. Chapter 13. What solitude is, and what kind of person a solitary man is. Solitude is a certain condition of a helpless man. For because a man is alone, he is not for that reason also solitary. Just as though a man is among numbers, he is not therefore not solitary. When then we have lost either a brother or a son or a friend on whom we were accustomed to repose, we say that we are left solitary, though we are often in Rome, though such a crowd meet us, though so many live in the same place, and sometimes we have a great number of slaves. For the man who is solitary, as it is conceived, is considered to be a helpless person and exposed to those who wish to harm him. For this reason, when we travel, then especially do we say that we are lonely when we fall among robbers, for it is not the sight of a human creature which removes us from solitude, but the sight of one who is faithful and modest and helpful to us. For if being alone is enough to make solitude, you may say that even Zeus is solitary in the conflagration and bewails himself, saying, "Unhappy that I am who have neither Hera, nor Athena, nor Apollo, nor brother, nor son, nor descendant, nor kinsman." This is what some say that he does when he is alone at the conflagration, for they do not understand how a man passes his life when he is alone, because they set out from a certain natural principle, from the natural desire of community and mutual love, and from the pleasure of conversation among men. But nonetheless, a man ought to be prepared in a manner for this also, to be able to be sufficient for himself and to be his own companion. For as Zeus dwells with himself and is tranquil by himself, and thinks of his own administration and of its nature, no Hades, no Acheron, nor Cocytus, nor Pyriphlegethon, but all is full of gods and demons. When a man has such things to think on, and sees the sun, the moon, and stars, and enjoys earth and sea, he is not solitary, nor even helpless. Well then, if some man should come upon me when I am alone and murder me? Fool, not murder you, but your poor body. What kind of solitude then remains? What want? Why do we make ourselves worse than children? And what do children do when they are left alone? They take up shells and ashes, and they build something, then pull it down, and build something else, and so they never want the means of passing the time. Shall I then, if you sail away, sit down and weep, because I have been left alone and solitary? Shall I then have no shells, no ashes? But children do what they do through want of thought, and we through knowledge are unhappy. Every great power is dangerous to beginners. You must then bear such things as you are able, but conformably to nature, but not. Practice sometimes a way of living like a man in health. Abstain from food, drink water, abstain sometimes altogether from desire, in order that you may sometime desire consistently with reason. And, if consistently with reason, when you have anything good in you, you will desire well. Not so, but we wish to live like wise men immediately, and to be useful to men. Useful how? What are you doing? Have you been useful to yourself? But I suppose you wish to exhort them. You exhort them. You wish to be useful to them. Show to them in your example what kind of men philosophy makes. Chapter 14. Certain Miscellaneous Matters. As bad tragic actors cannot sing alone, but in company with many, so some persons cannot walk about alone. Man, if you are anything, both walk alone and talk to yourself, and do not hide yourself in the chorus. Examine a little at last. Look around, stir yourself up, that you may know who you are. When a man drinks water or does anything for the sake of practice, whenever there is an opportunity, he tells it to all, "I drank water." Is it for this that you drink water, for the purpose of drinking water? Man, if it is good for you to drink, drink. But if not, you're acting ridiculously. But if it is good for you and you do drink, say nothing about it to those who are displeased with water drinkers. What then? Do you wish to please these very men? Of things that are done, some are done with a final purpose, some according to occasion, others with a certain reference to circumstances, others for the purpose of complying with others, and some according to a fixed scheme of life. You must root out of men these two things, arrogance and distrust. Arrogance, then, is the opinion that you want nothing, but distrust is the opinion that you cannot be happy when so many circumstances surround you. Arrogance is removed by confutation, and Socrates was the first who practiced this. And, that the thing is not impossible, inquire and seek. This search will do you no harm, and in a manner this is philosophizing, to seek how it is possible to employ desire and aversion without impediment. I am superior to you, for my father is a man of consular rank. Another says, I've been a tribune, but you have not. Chapter 15, that we ought to proceed with circumspection to everything. In every act, consider what precedes and what follows, and then proceed to the act. If you do not consider, you will at first begin with spirit, since you have not thought at all of the things which follow. But afterward, when some consequences have shown themselves, you will basely desist. I wish to conquer at the Olympic Games. And I too, by the gods, for it is a fine thing. But consider here what precedes and what follows. And then, if it is for your good, undertake the thing. You must act according to rules, follow strict diet, abstain from delicacies, exercise yourself by compulsion at fixed times, in heat, in cold, drink no cold water nor wine when there is opportunity of drinking it. In a word, you must surrender yourself to the trainer as you do to a physician. Next, in the contest, you must be covered with sand, sometimes dislocate a hand, sprain an ankle, swallow a quantity of dust, be scourged with the whip. And after undergoing all this, you must sometimes be conquered. After reckoning all these things, if you have still an inclination, go to the athletic practice. If you do not reckon them, observe you behave like children who, at one time, you play as wrestlers, then as gladiators, then blow a trumpet, then act a tragedy, when they have seen and admired such things. So you also do. You are, at one time, a wrestler, then a gladiator, then a philosopher, then a rhetorician. But with your whole soul, you are nothing. Like the ape, you imitate all that you see. And always one thing after another pleases you, but that which becomes. Chapter 16. That we ought with caution to enter into familiar intercourse with men. If a man has frequent intercourse with others, either for talk or drinking together, or generally for social purposes, he must either become like them or change them to his own fashion. For if a man places a piece of quenched charcoal close to a piece that is burning, either the quenched charcoal will quench the other, or the burning charcoal will light that which is quenched. Since then the danger is so great, We must cautiously enter into such intimacies with those of the common sort, and remember that it is impossible that a man can keep company with one who is covered with soot without being partaker of the soot himself. For what will you do if a man speaks about gladiators, about horses, about athletes, or, what is worse, about men? Such a person is bad. Such a person is good. This was well done. This was done badly. Further, if he scoff or ridicule or show an ill-natured disposition, is any man among us prepared like a lute player when he takes a lute so that as soon as he has touched the strings, he discovers which are discordant and tunes the instrument? Such a power as Socrates had, who, in all his social intercourse, could lead his companions to his own purpose? How should you have this power? It is therefore a necessary consequence that you are carried about by the common kind of people. Why then are they more powerful than you? Because they utter these useless words from their real opinions, but you utter your elegant words only from your lips. For this reason they are without strength and dead, and it is nauseous to listen to your exhortations and your miserable virtue, which is talked of everywhere. Chapter 17, On Providence. When you make any charge against Providence, consider, and you will learn that the thing has happened according to reason. Yes, but the unjust man has the advantage. In what? In money? Yes, for he is superior to you in this, that he flatters, is free from shame, and is watchful. What is the wonder? But see if he has the advantage over you in being faithful, in being modest, for you will not find it to be so. But wherein you are superior, there you will find that you have the advantage. And I once said to a man who was vexed, because Philostrygus was fortunate, "Would you choose to lie with Sura?" "May it never happen," he replied, "that this day should come." Why then are you vexed if he receives something in return for that which he sells? Or how can you consider him happy who acquires those things by such means as you abominate? Or what wrong does Providence if he gives the better things to the better men? Is it not better to be modest than to be rich? He admitted this. Why are you vexed then, man, when you possess the better thing? Remember then always, and have in readiness the truth that this is a law of nature, that the superior has an advantage over the inferior in that in which he is superior, and you will never be vexed. But my wife treats me badly. Well, if any man asks you what this is, say, "My wife treats me badly." Is there then nothing more? Nothing. My father gives me nothing. But to say that this is an evil is something which must be added to it externally and falsely added. For this reason, we must not get rid of poverty, but of the opinion about poverty, and then we shall be happy. Chapter 18. That we ought not to be disturbed by any news. When anything shall be reported to you which is of a nature to disturb, have this principle in readiness, that the news is about nothing which is within the power of your will. Can any man report to you that you had formed a bad opinion or had a bad desire? By no means. But perhaps he will report that some person is dead. What then is that to you? He may report that some person speaks ill of you. What then is that to you? Or that your father is planning something or other. Against whom? Against your will? How can he? But is it against your poor body? Against your little property? You are quite safe. It is not against you, but the judge declares that you have committed an act of impiety. And did not the judges make the same declaration against Socrates? Does it concern you that the judge has made this declaration? No. Why then do you trouble yourself any longer about it? Your father has a certain duty, and if he shall not fulfill it, he loses the character of a father, of a man of natural affection, of gentleness. Do not wish him to lose anything else on this account, for never does a man do wrong in one thing and suffer in another. On the other side, it is your duty to make your defense firmly, modestly, without anger. But if you do not, you also lose the character of a son, of a man of modest behavior, of generous character. Well then, is the judge free from danger? No, but he also is in equal danger. Why then are you still afraid of his decision? What have you to do with that which is another man's evil? It is your own evil to make a bad defense. Beyond Chapter 19. What is the condition of a common kind of man and of a philosopher? The first difference between a common person and a philosopher is this. The common person says, "Woe to me for my little child, for my brother, for my father." The philosopher, if he shall ever be compelled to say, "Woe to me," stops and says, "But for myself." For nothing which is independent of the will can hinder or damage the will, and the will can only hinder or damage itself. If then we ourselves incline in this direction, so as when we are unlucky to blame ourselves, and to remember that nothing else is the cause of perturbation or loss of tranquility except our own opinion, I swear to you by all the gods that we have made progress. But in the present state of affairs, we have gone another way from the beginning. For example, while we were still children, the nurse, if we ever stumbled through want of care, did not chide us, but would beat the stone. And what did the stone do? Ought the stone to have moved on account of your child's folly? Again, if we find nothing to eat on coming out of the bath, the pedagogue never checks our appetite, but he flogs the cook. Man, did we make you the pedagogue of the cook and not of the child? Correct the child. Improve him. In this way, even when we are grown up, we are like children. For he who is unmusical is a child in music. He who is without letters is a child in learning. He who is untaught is a child in life. Chapter 20. That we can derive advantage from all external things. In the case of appearances, we are objects of the vision. Nearly all have allowed the good and the evil to be in ourselves and not in the externals. No one gives the name of good to the fact that it is day, nor bad to the fact that it is night, nor the name of the greatest evil to the opinion that three are four. But what do men say? They say that knowledge is good and that error is bad, so that even in respect of falsehood itself there is a good result, the knowledge that it is falsehood. So it ought to be in life also. Is health a good thing and is sickness a bad thing? No, man. But what is it? To be healthy and healthy in a right way is good. To be healthy in a bad way is bad. So that it is possible to gain advantage even from sickness, I declare. For is it not possible to gain advantage even from death? And is it not possible to gain advantage from mutilation? Do you think that Meniscus gained little by death? Could a man who says so gain so much as Meniscus gained? Come, man, did he not maintain the character of being a lover of his country, a man of great mind, faithful, generous? And if he had continued to live, would he not have lost all these things? Would he not have gained the opposite? Would he not have gained the name of a coward, ignoble, a hater of his country, a man who feared death? Well, do you think that he gained little by dying? I suppose not. But did the father of Admetus gain much by prolonging his life so ignobly and miserably? Did he not die afterward? Cease, I adjure you by the gods, to admire things. 21. Against those who readily come to the profession of sophists. They who have taken up bare theorems immediately wish to vomit them forth, as persons whose stomach is diseased do with food. First digest the thing, then do not vomit it up thus. If you do not digest it, the thing becomes truly an emetic, a crude food and unfit to eat. But after digestion, show us some chance in your ruling faculty, as athletes show in their shoulders by what they have been exercised and what they have eaten, as those who have taken up certain arts show by what they have learned. The carpenter does not come and say, "Hear me talk about the carpenter's art," but having undertaken to build a house, he makes it and proves that he knows the art. You also ought to do something of the kind. Eat like a man. Drink like a man. Dress, marry, beget children. Do the office of a citizen. Endure abuse. Bear unreasonable brother. Bear with your father. Bear with your son. Neighbor, compassion. Show us these things, that we may see that you have, in truth, learned something from the philosophers. You say, no, but come and hear me read commentaries. Go away and seek somebody to vomit them on. And indeed, I will expound to you the writings of Chrysippus as no other man can. I will explain his text most clearly. I will add also, if I can, the vehemence of Antipater and Archidemus. Is it then for this that young men shall leave their country and their parents, that they may come to this place and hear you explain words? Ought they not to return with a capacity to endure, to be active in association with others, free from passions, free from perturbation? 22. About cynicism. When one of his pupils inquired of Epictetus, and he was a person who appeared to be inclined to cynicism, what kind of person a cynic ought to be, and what was the notion of the thing? We will inquire, said Epictetus, at leisure, but I have so much to say to you that he who without God attempts so great a matter is hateful to God, and has no other purpose than to act indecently in public. For in any well-managed house, no man comes forward and says to himself, I ought to be the manager of the house. If he does so, the master turns round and, seeing him insolently giving orders, drags him forth and flogs him. So it is also in this great city. For here also there is a master of the house who orders everything. You are the sun. You can, by going round, make the year and seasons, and make the fruits grow and nourish them, and stir the winds and make them remit, and warm the bodies of men properly. Go, travel round, and so administer things from the greatest to the least. You are a calf. When a lion shall appear, do your proper business. If you do not, you will suffer. You are a bull. Advance and fight, for this is your business and becomes you, and you can do it. You can lead the army against Ilium. Be Agamemnon. You can fight in single combat against Hector. Be Achilles. But if Thersites came forward and claimed the command, he would either not have obtained it, or, if he did obtain it, he would have disgraced himself before many witnesses. Do you also think about the matter carefully? It is not what it seems to you. I wear a cloak now, and I shall wear it then. I sleep hard now, and I shall sleep hard. Chapter 23. For those who read and discuss for the sake of ostentation. First say to yourself who you wish to be. Then do accordingly what you are doing. For in nearly all other things we see this to be so. Those who follow athletic exercises first determine what they wish to be. Then do accordingly what follows. If a man is a runner in the long course, there is a certain kind of diet, of walking, rubbing, and exercise. If a man is a runner in the stadium, all these things are different. If he is a pentathlete, they are still more different. So you'll find it also in the arts. If you are a carpenter, you will have such and such things. If a worker in metal, such things. For everything that we do, if we refer it to no end, we shall do it to no purpose. And if we refer it to the wrong end, we shall miss the mark. Further, there is a general end or purpose, and a particular purpose. First of all, we must act as a man. What is comprehended in this? We must not be like a sheep, though gentle, nor mischievous, like a wild beast. But the particular cud has reference to each person's mode of life and his will. The lute player acts as a lute player, the carpenter as a carpenter, the philosopher as a philosopher, the rhetorician as a rhetorician. When then you say, come and hear me read to you, take care first of all that you are not doing this without a purpose. Then, if you have discovered that you are doing this with reference to a purpose, consider if it is the right purpose. Do you wish to do good or to be praised? Immediately you hear him saying, Tell me, what is the value of praise from the many? And he says, well, for it is of no value to a musician. Chapter 24, that we ought not to be moved by a desire of those things which are not in our power. Let not that which in another is contrary to nature be an evil to you. For you are not formed by nature to be depressed with others, nor to be unhappy with others, but to be happy with them. If a man is unhappy, remember that his unhappiness is his own fault. For God has made all men to be happy, to be free from perturbations. For this purpose he has given means to them, some things to each person as his own, and other things not as his own. Some things subject to hindrance and compulsion and deprivation, and these things are not a man's own. But the things which are not subject to hindrances are his own. And the nature of good and evil, as it was fit to be done by him who takes care of us and protects us like a father, he has made our own. But, you say, I have parted from a certain person, and he is grieved. Why did he consider as his own that which belongs to another? Why, when he looked on you and was rejoiced, did he not also reckon that you are mortal, that it is natural for you to part from him for a foreign country? Therefore, he suffers the consequences of his own folly. But why do you, or for what purpose, bewail yourself? Is it that you also have not thought of these things? But, like poor women who are good for nothing, you have enjoyed all things in which you took pleasure, as if you would always enjoy them, both places and men and conversation. And now you sit and weep, because you do not see the same persons, and do not live in the same places. Indeed, you deserve this, to be more wretched than crows and ravens, who have the power of flying where they please, and changing their nests for others, and crossing the sea. Chapter 25. To those who fall off from their purpose. Consider as to the things which you proposed to yourself at first, which you have secured, and which you have not, and how you are pleased when you recall to memory the one, and are pained about the other. And if it is possible, recover the things wherein you failed. For we must not shrink when we are engaged in the greatest combat, but we must even take blows. For the combat before us is not in wrestling and the pancration, in which both the successful and the unsuccessful may have the greatest merit, or may have little, and in truth may be very fortunate or very unfortunate. But the combat is for good fortune and happiness themselves. Well then, even if we have renounced the contest in this matter, no man hinders us from renewing the combat again, and we are not compelled to wait for another 4 years that the games at Olympia may come again. But as soon as you have recovered and restored yourself, and employ the same zeal, you may renew the combat again, and if again you renounce it, you may again renew it. And if you once gain the victory, you are like him who has never renounced the combat. Only do not, through a habit of doing the same thing, begin to do it with pleasure, and then, like a bad athlete, go about after being conquered in all the circuit of the games, like quails who have run away. The sight of a beautiful young girl overpowers me. Well, have I not been overpowered before? An inclination arises in me to find fault with a person. For have I not found fault with him before? You speak to us as if you had come off free from harm, just as if a man should say to his physician, who forbids him to bathe, have I not? Chapter 26. To those who fear want. Are you not ashamed at more cowardly and more mean than fugitive slaves? How do they, when they run away, leave their masters? On what estates do they depend? And what domestics do they rely on? Do they not, after stealing a little, which is enough for the first days, then afterward move on through land or through sea, contriving one method after another for maintaining their lives? And what fugitive slave ever died of hunger? But you are afraid lest necessary things should fall you, and are sleepless by night. Wretch, are you so blind? And don't you see the road to which the want of necessaries leads? Well, where does it lead? to the same place to which a fever leads, or a stone that falls on you, to death. Have you not often said this yourself to your companions? Have you not read much of this kind and written much? And how often have you boasted that you were easy as to death? Yes, but my wife and children also suffer hunger. Well, then, does their hunger lead to any other place? Is there not the same descent to some place for them also? Is not there the same state below for them? Do you not choose, then, to look to that place full of boldness against every want and deficiency, to that place to which both the richest and those who have held the highest offices and kings themselves and tyrants must descend, or to which you will descend hungry if it should so happen, but they burst by indigestion and drunkenness? What beggar did you hardly ever see who was not an old man, and even of extreme old age, but chilled with cold day and night and lying on the ground? This has been The Discourses of Epictetus by Epictetus, narrated by Russell Newton. To learn more about today's author or book, please visit Amazon.com or Audible.com. With an eclectic collection of water cooler knowledge, inspirational stories, and motivational thoughts from some of the newest audiobooks on the market, this has been the Voice Overwork Podcast, brought to you by Newton Media Group, a family of creative services.